Okay, let's unpack something that is incredibly challenging for so many people: complex Lyme disease. If you're navigating this, you know the feeling. It's persistent, often comes with confusing symptoms and trying to figure out treatment options. It can feel like drowning in information, especially when, well, standard approaches just aren't cutting it.
It's definitely not a simple picture. Lyme is caused by the bacterium Borrelia burgdorferi, sure, but it's really the way the infection behaves and how your body responds that creates this really intricate puzzle.
Exactly. And that's why we're doing a deep dive today into this stack of source material you brought us. This material takes a really interesting look at potential advanced strategies, specifically focusing on herbal and supplemental approaches. But not just, listing herbs, it really digs into the functional biochemistry behind these plant compounds. It looks at what in vitro studies, lab studies, show about their activity against Borrelia and common co-infections like Bartonella and Babesia.
Yeah, think of this deep dive as exploring a kind of detailed conceptual map. It's the kind of thinking that might inform, say, a skilled herbal compoundist who's working hand in hand with a qualified healthcare practitioner. It's complex stuff, definitely, showing the potential interactions right down at a cellular level.
Right. So our mission here is to go through this material with you, the listener, and extract the most important nuggets. We want to highlight the why behind these potential approaches, really grounding it in the biochemical insights that are presented in these sources. Why these compounds? Why these combinations?
Exactly. So you can see the potential logic and the research basis, even if it's laboratory research, that underpins these kinds of, well, sophisticated strategies being discussed in functional herbalism circles.
Okay, let's start by setting the stage then. Why is complex Lyme disease such a formidable challenge in the first place? It's clearly more than just dealing with that initial spearhead form of Borrelia we hear about early on, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. One of the key insights this source material really emphasizes is Borrelia's ability to, well, shapeshift. It doesn't just exist as the mobile, spiral-shaped spirochete. It can also transform into less active, more dormant forms, often called stationary or persister phases. And crucially, it can embed itself within these protective communities called biofilms.
Biofilms, like a protective shield or something.
Exactly. Think of them like microbial cities or maybe fortresses. They are complex structures made of sugars, proteins, DNA that the bacteria basically create around themselves. And this makes them much, much harder for the immune system and, importantly, many conventional antimicrobials to penetrate and eliminate. The bacteria hiding inside these biofilms are in that persister phase. They're often much less susceptible to treatment.
Okay, wow. So you have a tricky pathogen that can hide and change form. But as your sources point out, it's rarely alone in the body, is it? Co-infections seem almost standard issue.
Very frequently, yeah. A tick bite can transmit multiple pathogens all at once. The material you shared highlights that Lyme disease often overlaps with other tick-borne infections like Bartonella species, Babesia species, Mycoplasma. These co-infections significantly complicate everything, right? From the symptoms you feel to the treatment strategy needed, you often need a broader approach that considers these other players.
And the sources call out specific examples, right? I saw that.
Yes, they mentioned Babesia duncani. That's a parasitic co-infection, needs specific approaches, often different from bacterial ones. And they note that Bartonella hensilei, often associated with cat scratch disease, but it's tick-borne too, also forms its own persister cells and biofilms, actually quite similar to Borrelia. So you've got this multi-microbial, multi-form complexity going on.
Wow. Okay. So tricky microbes, tricky forms, often layered with other tricky microbes. But the sources are clear. That's only part of the picture. What about your body's role in all this mess?
This is absolutely critical, and the source material really emphasizes it. Chronic Lyme isn't just an infection, it's an illness involving your entire system. A major part of the chronic symptoms actually comes from dysregulation of your own immune response. Things like chronic inflammation, imbalances in signaling molecules called cytokines, and potentially even autoimmune reactions where your body mistakenly starts attacking itself.
Cytokines. Remind us what those are again.
Sure. Think of cytokines as tiny messenger molecules your immune cells use to talk to each other to communicate. In a healthy response, they help coordinate the attack on pathogens, clean things up. But in chronic illness, these messages can become, well, chaotic, and that leads to widespread inflammation, fatigue, pain, those neurological symptoms. So managing your body's inflammatory signaling is just as crucial, really, as trying to hit the microbes themselves.
Okay, so a comprehensive strategy, like the ones outlined in these sources, has to work on multiple fronts then, it sounds like. Target the pathogens in their various forms, break down those protective biofilms, and modulate your immune response calm inflammation, support your nervous system, and help your body detoxify.
Precisely. It's a multifaceted problem, and it really requires a multifaceted approach. That's the core idea.
Okay. So given this really complex target, the sources then lay out some foundational principles for designing these kinds of herbal protocols. The very first one jumps out immediately. There's no magic bullet.
Right. The principle of individualization is absolutely paramount. The sources state it very clearly. There is no one-size-fits-all approach, and this is key. Your specific presentation of Lyme, your genetics, your nutritional status, how long you've been ill, other health conditions you might have, the specific mix of pathogens you're dealing with, all of that will influence how you respond. Any protocol absolutely must be tailored specifically for you by a knowledgeable practitioner. Generic approaches, they rarely work well in complex chronic illness.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. You can't just treat everyone experiencing Lyme symptoms the exact same way. Okay, the next principle they discuss is synergy. What's that about?
This is really a core concept in complex herbalism. It's the idea that combining multiple herbs or specific plant compounds can create an effect that's actually greater than just adding up the individual parts. You might combine herbs to target different aspects of the illness at the same time, you know, hitting the pathogen, breaking down biofilms, calming inflammation all at once. Or sometimes one herb might even help another herb be absorbed better or work more effectively in the body. The protocols presented here, they're conceptually built on leveraging these potential synergistic interactions.
Interesting. And finally, they introduce the idea of a phased or cyclical approach.
Yeah, because chronic Lyme is often a long-term challenge, right? Treatment isn't usually just a short course. So while the sources present two distinct conceptual protocols, they call them Protocol Alpha and Protocol Beta, they are conceptualized as potentially being used sequentially or maybe even in rotation over time.
So maybe Protocol Alpha first to really, like, take an aggressive stance against the microbes in the biofilms. And then maybe Protocol Beta later to focus more on healing and restoring your system's balance. Is that the idea?
That's certainly one way to think about it based on the source's description, yeah. It allows the therapeutic focus to adapt as your clinical picture changes over time. Flexibility and adaptation are really crucial when you're managing a dynamic condition like this.
Okay, let's dive into Protocol Alpha then. The source describes it as the comprehensive pathogen and biofilm offensive. Sounds intense. What's the main goal with this conceptual strategy?
Well, the name kind of says it all, doesn't it? It's designed to be aggressive. The core focus is hitting multiple forms of Borrelia, targeting those pom and co-infections like Babesia and Bartonella, actively disrupting the protective biofilms, and very importantly, supporting detoxification pathways right from the beginning. That's key to help manage the body's reaction to killing microbes.
Okay, let's look at some of the key ingredients mentioned in this protocol, drawing from those detailed tables in your source material. When it comes to directly targeting the microbes, what really stands out there?
The sources highlight Cryptolepis sanguinolenta. This herb shows really strong activity in vitro in the lab against Borrelia burgdorferi. And that includes those hard-to-treat stationary phase forms, apparently eradicating them in laboratory dishes. It also targets Babesia duncani, preventing its regrowth in those specific studies.
What about garlic oil? Most people know garlic is antimicrobial.
Right. Garlic oil, or more specifically, its active sulfur compounds, is highlighted for its potency against persistent B. burgdorferi in vitro. Some lab tests showed complete eradication. It's also shown effectiveness against Babesia in studies. And yeah, it's well known generally as a broad antimicrobial.
Japanese knotweed, Polygonum cuspidatum. I've definitely heard of that one. Usually related to resveratrol.
Exactly. It contains resveratrol, which is part of why the sources note it targets B. burgdorferi and Babesia. But its inclusion here isn't just about being antimicrobial. It provides crucial systemic benefits, too. It's anti-inflammatory, it's neuroprotective, meaning it protects nerve cells, and it supports endothelial health, which is the lining of your blood vessels. And that's important because Lyme can really impact blood vessel function.
Okay. Sweet wormwood, Artemisia annua. That sounds like something used against parasites like malaria.
It is. Its main compound, artemisinin, is a key agent used clinically against malaria, which is also caused by a parasite. So yeah, it's a primary anti-Babesia agent here. And the sources also note its activity against B. burgdorferi as well.
What about cat's claw, Oncaria tomentosa?
That's described as a core anti-Borrelia agent in the sources. It's noted for targeting multiple forms of Borrelia spirochetes, cyst forms, and even biofilms, while also offering some immune support.
Cinnamon bark oil, another common spice rack item.
Uh-huh, but potent. shows activity against B. burgdorferi stationary forms and, importantly, Bartonella henselae persisters in vitro. The sources also point to its potential for disrupting biofilms.
Speaking of biofilms, are there ingredients specifically included just to break down those protective structures? Because that seems key.
Yes, definitely. Several key players are mentioned for that specific role. Stevia rebaudiana extract, yes, the sweetener plant, is highlighted as a specific biofilm disruptor against B. burgdorferi biofilms in lab studies. Serrapeptase, which is an enzyme, is included because it can apparently break down the protein components of the biofilm matrix. The idea is that it potentially makes it easier for other agents to get through to the bacteria hiding inside. Monolaurin is another one, disrupting the fatty membranes found in both bacteria and biofilms.
And for co-infections like Bartonella specifically, anything targeted there?
Yeah, Houghtonia cordata is mentioned. It's considered a primary natural remedy for Bartonella in some clinical approaches, so that adds a specific focus for that common co-infection, alongside ingredients like cinnamon bark oil, which also seems to target it based on the in vitro data.
And you mentioned supporting detoxification right from the get-go in alpha. What's included for that?
Berber and parsley extracts are listed right from the outset in this conceptual protocol. Their role is basically to help support your body's natural detoxification pathways and manage something called a Jarisch-Herxheimer reaction, or Herxy reaction for short. That can happen as pathogens die off and release toxins.
Okay, let's dig a bit into how these ingredients are thought to work together. Looking at the synergy in the biochemistry the sources discuss in Protocol Alpha.
Yeah, the source material really emphasizes this multi-pronged approach. So, for example, when targeting biofilms, agents like serrapeptase, monolaurin stevia, cat's claw, and maybe Chinese skullcap are chosen to work together. The aim is to weaken or break down that biofilm structure, which theoretically makes it easier for the antimicrobial agents like cryptolepis or garlic oil to penetrate and actually reach the microbes hidden inside.
And what about the essential oils, garlic, cinnamon, thyme, myrrh? You mentioned those. Is there something about their chemistry that makes them particularly good for this?
Absolutely. And this is a key biochemical insight from the sources. Their lipophilic nature, meaning they are fat soluble, is really crucial here. Persistent bacteria, and especially those in biofilms, often have lipid-rich membranes or they're embedded in fatty material. Water-soluble compounds might have trouble getting past these fatty layers, but the fat-soluble components in these essential oils, they can more readily cross these barriers. That potentially lets them reach protected bacteria and disrupt their cell membranes or maybe key enzymes.
So it's about using compounds that can actually get into the places the bacteria are hiding, not just floating around outside.
That's the core concept, yes. And they employ what's called a multi-target antimicrobial strategy. So instead of relying on just one way to kill bacteria, they combine agents that work via different mechanisms. Some might disrupt cell membranes like monolaurin or components in those essential oils. Some interfere with DNA, like maybe cryptolepis alkaloids. Some generate oxidative stress. Some inhibit enzymes. This kind of diverse attack aims to overwhelm the pathogen's ability to defend itself and potentially reduce the likelihood of resistance developing.
And we saw how they layer in targeting for co-infections within this same framework too.
Right. Agents like Artemisia, specifically for Babesia, Houghtonia, and cinnamon, perhaps more for Bartonella. And importantly, many of these also have overlapping activity against Borrelia, which creates multiple layers of potential coverage.
Okay, you mentioned managing the Herxheimer reaction, that die-off effect. Why is supporting detoxification so critical from a biochemical perspective when you're doing this kind of aggressive offensive?
Well, because when you effectively kill off a lot of microbes, especially bacteria, they release components, things like endotoxins, other inflammatory molecules, and this floods your system. Now, if your body's natural detoxification pathways, think your liver processing compounds, your kidneys filtering waste, your lymphatic system clearing things out if those are sluggish or already overwhelmed, these toxins build up. That's what causes that flare of symptoms, the Herbrecht's reaction. The source really emphasizes that your own intrinsic detoxification capacity is a huge factor in how severe these reactions are.
Right. So supporting those detox pathways isn't just something nice to do alongside the protocol. It's actually biochemically necessary for your body to even tolerate this kind of aggressive microbial targeting, especially in something like Protocol Alpha.
Precisely. It's fundamental to managing treatment feasibility, tolerability, and ultimately success. It allows your body to process and eliminate the microbial debris and the inflammatory response that it triggers.
Fascinating. Okay. So Protocol Alpha is the targeted aggressive offensive. Now let's shift gears to Protocol Beta. The source describes this one as systemic restoration and immune rebalance. What's the fundamental change in strategy here?
The emphasis shifts significantly, yeah. It's less about going in hard to kill pathogens, although the sources suggest there's still a moderate, persistent antimicrobial pressure maintained. But the core focus moves to modulating your host response. So calming chronic inflammation, supporting neurological and endothelial health, enhancing systemic detoxification, and really rebuilding your body's resilience.
So it's more about helping your body heal and get back into balance, maybe after dealing with the infection itself and potentially the effects of an earlier aggressive treatment phase.
Exactly. The goal here is to rebalance the immune system, dampen down that disruptive cytokine signaling, support brain function, protect blood vessels, bolster your stress response system, and keep your natural detox pathways flowing smoothly, all while maintaining a kind of gentle pressure on any lingering infection.
Okay, let's look at some key ingredients in Protocol Beta, again based on the source material. What's central to rebalancing the immune system and tackling that systemic inflammation?
Andrographis paniculata is highlighted as really important for neuroinflammation and immune balance. The sources note its compounds can cross the blood-brain barrier, which is pretty significant for addressing things like brain fog and neurological symptoms. And it modulates key inflammatory pathways. Scutellaria bicalensis, Chinese skullcap, continues to be central here too for managing inflammation, particularly that driven by cytokines, and also for its calming effects on the nervous system, maybe helping with anxiety.
And Japanese knotweed shows up again, still important in this phase.
Yes. Polygonum cuspidatum remains crucial in beta, according to the source, for its systemic benefits, supporting vascular health, reducing overall inflammation, providing neuroprotection, leveraging its resveratrol content, sure, but really supporting the body's overall infrastructure.
What about adaptogens, herbs that help the body adapt to stress? Those seem like they'd be really important in chronic illness.
Oh, they are very prominent in protocol beta, yeah. Ashwagandha is included for supporting your stress response system, your adrenals. Also for enhancing immune resilience, the source mentions it might help normalize certain immune cell counts, like CD4 plus T cells, and generally reducing inflammatory tone. Rhodiola rosea is there to combat fatigue, enhance mental clarity, and improve stress adaptation. These really help your body cope better with the ongoing burden of the illness.
Addressing the brain fog, cognitive issues, fatigue, that's such a massive part of managing complex Lyme for people. What's in beta specifically to address that constellation of symptoms?
Right. This protocol creates a significant axis aimed squarely at neurocognitive and emotional support. So you see ingredients like Bacopa monnieri, which is known as a nootropic, for cognitive support and memory enhancement. Schizandra chinensis, or Sphenanthera, is included for cognitive function, supporting neuronal repair, and it also helps with liver detoxification, which is a nice bonus. Andrographis, as we mentioned, crosses the blood-brain barrier to reduce brain inflammation. Motherwort, Leonurus cardiaca, is included for calming anxiety, maybe aiding sleep, supporting emotional balance symptoms that are often really heightened by neuroinflammation. And then rhodiola and cordyceps help combat that deep fatigue and improve mental stamina.
The sources mentioned this combination aims to interrupt negative neuroinflammatory feedback loops. Can you break that down? What does that mean in simpler terms?
Yeah, think of it like this. Chronic infection and the inflammation it causes can irritate and inflame the brain itself. This brain inflammation then messes up normal brain function, leading to that awful sickness behavior. You know, the brain fog, the fatigue, the mood changes, feeling generally unwell. And this state can then further disrupt your hormone balance and your immune regulation, creating a kind of vicious cycle. So by using herbs that calm the nervous system, reduce brain inflammation, support cognitive processes, and improve stress resilience, this protocol aims to break that feedback loop. The idea is to allow the brain and body to start healing and re-regulating themselves.
And why the focus on vascular health, the endothelial integrity, in this restoration phase?
Well, the sources note that the lining of your blood vessels, the endothelium, can be impacted by chronic Lyme. This can potentially affect circulation and overall tissue health. So herbs like Japanese knotweed and ginkgo biloba are included here to help protect those endothelial cells, improve microcirculation, and reduce vascular inflammation. Good blood flow is just essential for delivering nutrients and oxygen for healing and for carrying away waste products effectively.
We saw multi-pathway anti-inflammation in protocol alpha. Does beta continue that approach?
Yes, it does, but maybe with a slightly different emphasis. Less about clearing space for antimicrobials, perhaps, and more focused on achieving systemic calm. So they combine agents that act on different inflammatory pathways. You've got Andrographis modulating things like NF-kappa dollars, which is like a master control switch for inflammation. You have Skullcap broadly inhibiting various cytokines, those inflammatory messengers. And then something like beta-caryophyllene, a plant compound, not psychoactive, specifically targeting the CB2 cannabinoid receptor, which is involved in regulating inflammation and pain, mostly outside the brain. Combining these aims for a more comprehensive systemic dampening of inflammation overall.
And ongoing detoxification and organ support. Still important here.
Absolutely essential for any long-term healing process, really. General detox support herbs like dandelion, burdock, artichoke are mentioned to help liver and kidney function. Schizandra specifically supports the liver. Cordyceps supports kidneys, lungs, and overall vitality. Ashwagandha helps the adrenals, which are often really taxed by chronic stress and illness. It's all about ensuring the body can keep processing any residual toxins and has the energy and resilience it needs to recover fully.
Okay, it's really clear that both protocol alpha and protocol beta, as described in your source material, are incredibly complex multi-ingredient approaches. What are the absolute key considerations for anyone even thinking about putting something like this into practice? What do the sources stress?
The source material highlights several critical points, and yeah, they are absolutely non-negotiable. First, gradual titration. This is fundamental. You start with a very low dosage of any new compound or combination, and you slowly, incrementally increase it based entirely on how your individual body tolerates it.
And why is that so important, especially thinking about the biochemistry?
Well, it does a couple of things. It allows your body's metabolic and detoxification systems time to adapt to processing all these new compounds you're introducing. But maybe even more importantly, it allows you to control the rate at which microbes might be dying off. And that directly impacts the severity of that Jarisch-Herxheimer reaction we talked about.
Right. Let's revisit the Herxheimer reaction for just a moment. Describe it again and why managing it is so central to the actual feasibility of these protocols.
Okay, so it's a temporary worsening of your symptoms, things like fever, chills, headache, fatigue, muscle aches, maybe neurological flares that occurs when microbes are killed off rapidly. As they break down, they release toxins and stimulate a big inflammatory response from your body. It can feel like you've hit a wall or got the flu suddenly. And the source strongly emphasizes that your own intrinsic detoxification capacity is probably the primary limiting factor here. If your liver, your kidneys, your lymphatic system aren't effectively clearing these released toxins and inflammatory signals, your HERTEX reactions will be much more pronounced, potentially to the point where you just can't continue the treatment. It becomes intolerable.
So supporting those detoxification pathways, which is conceptually included in both protocols, isn't just a good idea. It sounds like a biochemical necessity for you to even tolerate the antimicrobial parts, especially that more aggressive approach in alpha.
Precisely. It's intimately linked to treatment tolerability, adherence, and ultimately success. And it might require significant focus and support based on your individual metabolic and detox function. Some people need more support there than others.
Yeah, okay. And given how many specific herbs there are and how complex these theoretical combinations are, you absolutely couldn't just read this and try to self-prescribe or mix things up yourself, could you?
Oh, absolutely not. And the sources are extremely clear on this point. They stress the indispensable role of both a skilled herbal compoundist and a qualified healthcare practitioner. These protocols are conceptual frameworks, remember. The compoundist has the expertise in the plants themselves, ensuring quality, understanding how to best prepare them. Is it a tincture, a capsule, a tea? Checking for compatibility issues between herbs, and accurately preparing dosages based on a practitioner's specific instructions.
And the practitioner's role, absolutely crucial, I imagine.
Essential. Essential for your safety and efficacy. They perform the necessary individual assessment of your specific condition, your history, your current state. They tailor the conceptual protocol for you. They monitor your response to treatment closely. They manage any reactions, like those Hurvix flares. They identify potential interactions with other medications or supplements you might be taking. And they make necessary adjustments to the plan over what could be a long period of time. This collaboration is just vital.
And as you noted earlier, this isn't usually a quick fix, is it?
No, definitely not. Treating complex chronic illnesses like Lyme often requires months or even years of consistent effort and adaptation. Regular monitoring by your practitioner is essential to track how you're progressing, identify any issues that might arise, and adapt the plan as your condition changes. Maybe that means shifting focus between pathogen targeting and systemic support, or maybe rotating different herbs to prevent the body adapting too much.
Okay. So to bring this deep dive into the source material you provided to a close, we've looked at two broad conceptual approaches it lays out. There was protocol alpha, the offensive strategy, focused on aggressively targeting the pathogens Borrelia and common co-infections in their various tricky forms and within those protective biofilms.
Right. While crucially integrating support for your detoxification pathways to manage the downstream effects of that microbial die-off, it leverages the specific biochemical actions of compounds, like lipophilicity for penetration, and employs those multi-target mechanisms, all based on the presented in vitro data.
And then there was Protocol Beta, the respiration strategy. That shifts the emphasis much more towards supporting your body systems, calming immune dysregulation, supporting neurological function, rebuilding resilience, and maintaining ongoing detoxification.
Exactly. Using combinations of adaptogens, anti-inflammatories that work on multiple pathways, neuroprotectants, and specific organ support herbs, all designed to help your system heal and rebalance and hopefully interrupt those cycles of chronic inflammation and sickness behavior.
But the absolute core takeaway, the principle that really ties it all together and is stressed repeatedly in the sources you shared, is that there is truly no one-size-fits-all approach.
Exactly. That's the bottom line. The most effective path forward in complex Lyme disease is always going to be a carefully individualized one, designed specifically for you based on your unique situation and implemented collaboratively with knowledgeable professionals, your qualified healthcare practitioner, and ideally a skilled herbal compoundist if you're going down that route.
Because the landscape of understanding complex illnesses like Lyme and the potential of natural compounds backed by research, it's constantly evolving, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Staying informed like you are by digging into this material with us and working closely with your practitioner is truly key to navigating this really challenging journey.
Mm-hmm. And as always, just to be clear, this deep dive has been for informational purposes only, based entirely on the specific source material provided. It is absolutely not medical advice.
Always, always consult your healthcare provider for any diagnosis and treatment decisions.
Yeah.
Any conceptual protocol like the ones discussed here should only ever be considered and potentially used under their direct, qualified supervision.
It's a fundamental safeguard. Really can't stress that enough.
So considering everything we've unpacked from these sources today, the intricate ways the pathogens hide and persist, the central role of your body's inflammatory response, the absolute necessity of supporting your detoxification capacity to even tolerate treatment, and that critical partnership required with skilled practitioners. What does that suggest about the journey of healing from complex chronic illnesses like this? Is it ultimately just about trying to kill a target microbe? Or is it perhaps equally, if not maybe more, about understanding and supporting the intricate balance and resilience within your own system, guided by expert knowledge? Something to really think about.